This is Bronwyn Schwagert, licensed therapist and author at the Angry at the Right Things podcast. Instead of controlling our anger, we'll be looking at what causes it in the first place, so we can rectify what's dysfunctional in our lives and in the world. Here we go. Hello, and welcome back to Angry at the Right Things. I am here with Katie Wanderer.
Hello again.
And we have had a lot of fun lately, just chatting and catching up. And I think the topic we want to talk about today is kind of just not betraying ourselves, really, and what that looks like in relationship on a practical level. And I wanted to start, Katie doesn't know I'm going to do this, but I'm going to out her because she has had some phenomenal progress with attuning to herself and her feelings and not downplaying her feelings of frustration or anger, and not giving in and being a pleaser. Right, Katie?
Right. True.
So, So do you want to tell us about the last thing you told me, which maybe there's an update, but the last thing I think you shared with me was the salon experience.
The hair salon experience.
Yeah.
Okay, sure. So I go to this local inexpensive place to get my hair cut.
Like a Supercuts.
It's not Supercuts, but it's something like that. So not a place where you have an appointment. You just walk in. And I normally wait and only go when there's a certain person there who I trust to cut my hair. But I was having one of those days where I just really felt like I needed a haircut and she wasn't working. And so I just said, oh, let's throw caution to the wind and just go get a haircut. And so I went in and there was a long wait. And someone was on break and I could tell that the person that was on break was probably going to be the person that was going to cut my hair, just because of the way the waiting list was set up. And all of a sudden, this person who works at the salon, I've seen her there before, comes in the door and she just gives off this feeling of being really agitated.
Mm-hmm. She's one of the workers there.
She's one of the stylists there. And she just seems generally kind of agitated.
Mm-hmm.
Like not relaxed like you would hope someone might be after their lunch break. But like...
Yeah, or when really, they're going to cut your hair.
Yeah, when they're going to cut your hair, right? You're going to trust someone to cut your hair. And she checks back in, like, you know, on the computer. And then another customer comes in and asks her a question. And she seems even more agitated, like her voice is raised and her tone is sharp.
It's just like it just seems from what you share with me, the nature of the customer's question, this woman who works there, the stylist, seemed like just kind of annoyed in general and like reactionary.
Totally.
And not at all attuning. Yeah,
not attuning to the customer and not, you know.
Just in a mood.
Like in a mood. Horrible mood. Not, you know, like even when you're in a mood, when you work in that field where customer service is a big part of your job.
Very big.
You have to put whatever's going on with you kind of aside and show your best, you know, friendliest self. And she wasn't doing that. So I was sitting there kind of observing this and thought, oh gosh, she's going to call my name and it's going to be this upset, agitated woman is going to be the person cutting my hair.
Yeah.
And I'm trying to like not prejudge her, give her the benefit of the doubt. Because I don't want to create more drama. So when she, of course, inevitably calls my name, I go over and sit down and I try to explain to her what I want and we just cannot seem to communicate with each other. And
which, again, is really important that a hairstylist is understanding you, being patient with you.
Yeah. And it wasn't like I was asking for something crazy or impossible, you know, which I know sometimes customers do that. It was a realistic request.
She was kind of challenging you. You weren't really asking anything.
And it felt really combative right from the very beginning. And I felt just ill at ease. And it kind of continued that way. She kept asking me questions, and it was just like we were just not on the same wavelength. And I was just feeling increasingly uncomfortable. And I thought, am I really going to sit here and have this person cut my hair that I feel like is not understanding what I want? And
Or willing to listen to me.
Like, it was like she didn't really want to listen to what I had to say. And so all of a sudden I just said, you know what? I'm not comfortable. I'm going to go.
You just stood up.
And she, well, first she said, no, we can, you know, like we'll figure it out. And I was like, no, I'm going to go. Thank you. And she just quickly like pulled the little cape off and the little thing they wrap around your neck. And, I walked out and it felt really icky and weird, but it felt so much better than if I had sat there and gone through this experience that I know would not have gone well. And I felt rattled, but I felt proud of myself. Like I had stood up for myself, but had not been unkind or rude to this person, even though the way she was behaving made me feel really uncomfortable. I just kind of excused myself from the situation the best way that I could. And that was really empowering for me.
And I also want to reflect that as a recovering pleaser, you didn't feel the need to explain. Like, well, it turns out, you know, I actually have to go pick up my son. I actually, you know.
You didn't make up stuff. The old me might have done that. Have like come up with some kind of elaborate excuse to like suddenly have to go.
I love that you shared this with me like a month ago when it happened. And Katie, you just, you did everything just right because you didn't feel the need to explain or make up shit. So many people do. I don't want to hurt their feelings, so I'm just going to like create this big elaboration of what, you know, this excuse. You didn't apologize.
No.
But you didn't, you weren't hurtful either. Like you said, you didn't say anything you regret. You were just true to yourself. And it was, it's so simple and so profound all at once that you just said, you know what? I'm not comfortable here and I'm going to go. And you did. And so I just love this because I feel like this is emblematic of exactly what I try to teach people about anger. You were true to yourself and your level of discomfort and probably frustration, but you didn't like have to, it didn't blow up. A lot of people are so afraid of anger. Oh, if I give in to my anger, I'm going to say things I regret. I'm going to be violent with my words or with my actions. And you didn't suppress it. You attuned to it and you were faithful and you channeled it in a healthy way and you didn't betray yourself and you didn't betray anyone else in the process.
It was definitely an overall a win, I think. A painful one, but it was worth it.
But how much more painful would it have been
if I had betrayed myself and sat there and then been miserable and gotten a horrible haircut. And
I know.
Just wanted to kick myself. So it was good.
I love that. So I wanted to share that. I wanted Katie to share that. And I wanted to reflect on myself, where I'm at with all that. So, you know, for me, I actually wrote out something that I want to share. So what this person, this woman was in is a state of denial. So people who are in denial are not, they don't, you know, we hear denial around people who are using, who are addicts, whether they're alcoholics or drug addicts. We hear, oh, they're in denial. Well, that does exist. But I would say most humans are in denial of their own feelings. And she seemed very in denial of her own issues. And that's when we're in denial of ourselves, when we're refusing to be self-aware and to own our issues and our behaviors and our feelings, then they leak out in the worst ways. And she just sounds like she was in a place of self, you know, choosing not to be self-aware and therefore responsible of herself. And that's what you witnessed. And I wrote that people in denial are lying to themselves. They live in a state of self-deception. And honestly, most of us do at different times. We deceive ourselves. We do.
Yeah.
That's a human phenomena, right? That's not just limited to this woman, right?
No.
But she was like actively in a state of like self-deception. Like,
yeah.
Oh, I'm totally going to be a great hairstylist, even though I can't, you know, attune to any of my clients and I refuse to listen to them. And I'm just going to act really hostile and annoyed to them. When in fact, what I'm really angry at is someone who's not here. And I'm not going to be responsible for my anger at that person who's really the person making me angry. So I'm going to take it out on everyone else, right?
Right.
So people in denial are in a state of self-deception and they cannot be honest with others because they're not being honest with themselves. So it's just,
yeah,
it's, we cannot ask or expect someone in a state of denial to be honest with us. So if you had asked her, hey, you seem like you're in a bad mood, but I'm just wondering if you can do this cut for me right now. And she would have said, oh yeah, sure. Of course.
Right.
But you can't trust that because you can tell she's in a state of self-deception.
Right. Right. She was not in a place where I felt like it could have, you know, acknowledged what was going on with her. Yeah.
Yeah. So you see that. And people who are in denial won't be honest with anyone else. They can't be. And so we, the other folks, need to manage our expectations. We need to not expect more from them, really, in that state. We need to not allow them to deceive us or make us second guess ourselves, which is exactly what they will do.
Yeah.
If left unchecked. And we need to protect ourselves from enabling them. And so honestly, you not only helped yourself, Katie, but you helped her because you did not enable her. If you had been like a full-blown pleaser and just be like, oh, well, I'm going to give her the benefit of the doubt, even though she keeps proving to me that there is no benefit here. And I'm just going to sit through this haircut and she's going to do whatever she's going to do. You would have been enabling her.
Yeah.
And that's not good for her either.
No.
It's not good for anyone. Enabling people is not being a nice person. Well, it might be being a nice person. It's not being a kind person.
Right, because it's not like reflecting to them who they are, who they're being. In that moment, the truth.
You're not right? reflecting the truth
You're acting
back
like
to them.
How they're acting is okay. And so that's they can right. keep behaving that way.
That is exactly right. You know, my daughter, she's 19. She was over here the other day and she said something because she was telling me at work and she goes, you know, Mom, I'm not a nice person, but I'm a kind person.
Yeah. Yeah. That's, I like that.
And we had a full discussion about nice versus kind.
Right.
And how a kind person will not enable unkind people. They will give a true reflection like you did. Like, I'm not comfortable. I'm going to go.
Yeah.
You were a kind person, but not nice. But do we really want nice people? Because who believes
a nice person? Nice is fine for passing your neighbor on the street, right?
How are you? Good. I'm good.
On that very superficial level, that's fine.
Yes.
But any kind of real interaction with another person.
Yeah.
It's kind of meaningless.
And so, yet so many of us are taught and brought up to be nice.
Oh my gosh.
Not kind.
Yes. Especially women and girls, I think. But everybody.
Yeah. Yeah. A good girl is a nice girl.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So she enables her abusive boyfriend.
Yeah.
A good girl, a nice girl.
Yeah.
But kind would be like, oh no, this ain't gonna work.
No.
Right? So I wrote a statement that I like to use with people, to be a kind person with people, not a nice person. And that is how we can protect ourselves from enabling other people who are choosing to self-deceive by, like you're saying, Katie, to simply reflect the truth. So this is a statement I wrote out. I hear you're not ready to acknowledge blah, 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 mm-hmm. right? Fill in the blank right now. I can respect that. That is your decision. However, it is having consequences that are affecting me, such as blah, blah, blah.
Right.
And so until you're ready to acknowledge the truth and create a safe environment for me, I am going to need to have a boundary with you, such as blah, blah, blah.
Right.
It's that simple. And that's kind of what you did with this woman by just saying, you know, I'm not comfortable. And then she tried to win you back and you're like, no.
Yeah.
Thank you. Hmm. So that was one example. My example has been with my father, who is going to be 83 in a few days. And I have not spoken to him since May. So about five months. And it's called tough love, what I'm talking about. Now, of course, with my father, it looks very different than a hairstylist. Yes. You know, right?
Yeah.
So to go give some background, what has really helped me and helps a lot of my clients, because with someone like a parent, which is, you know, if you can do a parent, you can do anyone.
Yeah.
If you can have these boundaries and this kind of being true to yourself with a parent, then, you know, hairstylists are easy.
Right.
But ultimately, it's saying something like, I love you too much to continue to allow you to hurt us both. And that was one of the things I said to my father.
I remember. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I love you too much to allow you to continue to hurt us both. And I wrote that on a social media thing that I'm on. It's a kind of a private thing. And someone said, oh my God, I love that response. I love how you phrase that, because it's not hurtful. It's not punitive.
Right.
It's just saying, no, I do love you.
Right.
But this is how much I love you.
Yeah.
I'm going to do what's best for you and me.
Yeah, I'm not going to be harmed by your choices.
And that's right? Good for both of us.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
So what I did with my father is I encourage anyone who really needs to have boundaries with their parents to do this, or with someone really close to them, is I had to document for myself just – experience after experience after experience. I had to put together all my memories in one place because they were floating around in my brain, showing up willy-nilly. And I just had to write them all out when they came. So anytime I'd have a memory, some of them were when I honestly have memories of when I was 5 years old with my dad. I have memories of when I was 10. I have memories throughout my whole life until the present. And I had to document everything that was emblematic of his pattern of narcissism with me. And I had to just put them all out on paper. Of course, mine was a Google Doc, but I had to see them written out in an objective way. And what that did for me was it allowed me, because my brain wanted to always go to the loving, kind memories of my dad. And I do have those.
Right.
And my brain will just naturally gravitate towards those. And so what I had to do is consolidate as many memories of the monster part of him as possible. And then whenever my brain started to trick me and go, oh, my dad, sweet dad, I had to sit down in front of my computer and read through the, you know, 25, 30 memories of him behaving like a monster and still doing this. Right. To remind myself. And what that did is it allowed me to integrate who he really is, because integration is an end goal of therapy. Integration is what we need to do with the people in our lives so we can see them for the whole and not the parts. We need to integrate good and bad of ourselves and others with the people in our lives who are closest to us.
Right.
And that was really just important. That was vital for me. And now I see him as a whole. He and I have told him in emails, we haven't talked for 5 months, but I said, you're about 80% monster. And I can't right. be in your life until you reincarnate 80% of yourself.
Yeah.
No more monster. Right. Too much monster. Not worth it.
No.
So that was really huge. And when I came to that conclusion that he is in fact 80% monster and not clinging to the good 20% that I wanted to cling to, I gave him an ultimatum. And that was the ultimatum. I love you too much to allow you to continue to hurt us both. Here are some examples. And I documented, I shared a lot of those memories with him. And the ultimatum said, you need to earn back my trust with an admission of your narcissistic behavior and an apology, and demonstrate to me that these patterns won't continue. And if you're willing to do that, we can have a great relationship. But if you're not, that's not going to happen. And this is tough love. This is what we call detach with love. Detachment. Detachment is really important because it allows us to have objectivity,
right?
We're not caught up in our younger selves, because let me tell you, little Bronwyn wants to see only the good in my dad.
Oh yeah. I was just thinking, I mean, this is a cliche, but it's a good way of picturing it in my mind. It's like you're wanting to just see the trees, but you need to see the forest too, right? You need to see the whole thing all together. And the 20% in your father that feels really good and you remember with warmth.
Yeah.
You know, of course you want to just see those trees, right? That feels good, but you have to see it all together.
Yeah, it feels really good to only see those trees until I'm around him.
Yeah.
And that's just a matter of time.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Until you see, then I experience the forest.
The whole picture.
And that hurts, and that's what I'm not willing to do again, because that betrays me.
Yeah.
And I can't do that anymore.
Yeah.
And so that said, it has not been easy, but it's been fantastic. Like, as in, I've never felt better in my life.
Right.
And
like, you're seeing reality.
Yeah.
So clear.
I'm living in reality for the first time.
Yeah.
It was easy to see my mom as monster because she was kind of 100%.
Yeah.
But this has not been easy.
No.
So one of the things that got incredibly, incredibly better for me was my lifelong insomnia.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I had insomnia, I think my first bout was when I was 18, and my first love, we broke up and I was fine. Actually, I think I initiated the breakup, but I found out, I called him like a couple days later to check on him. We were like attached to the hip for like a year. It was so toxic. But anyway, I called him a couple days later just to say hi, check in. I was not interested in dating him again ever, but I missed, you know, the friendship part.
Sure.
And this is when we all shared a landline with our roommates and everything. And I called and his roommate picks up and his roommate's like, oh, he just stepped out. And I knew, oh yeah, he's already dating someone.
Right.
And then I found out the girl he's already dating 2 days after I break up with him,
wow,
who I'm pretty sure he like had a relationship before we broke up.
Mm-hmm.
Looks, she doesn't look exactly like me, but she had the exact same hair I did, which this is when I was 18. I don't have the same hair I did then, but at 18, I had these long, curly blonde ringlets. And she had these long, curly blonde ringlets. And we both went to the same college and were on the same campus. And people would confuse us. As soon as they saw our faces, they would see, obviously, we're different. But she had the same hair. And I felt like that she replaced me. And that was what I couldn't deal with. And like I was replaceable.
Yeah.
And so it wasn't that I missed him, because like I said, I broke up with him. It'd been a few days. I check in on him. I find out he's replaced me with the girl with the same hair as me. I felt replaceable and I couldn't sleep that night. I remember I'd never had insomnia. I was 18. I remember lying on my bed looking up at the fan all night going, when am I going to go to sleep? I was angry. It was suppressed anger. Well, suppressed feelings of anger from feeling rejected.
Right. Right. So it wasn't even about the loss of him.
Not at all.
It was that he had replaced you.
Yeah. It was rejection.
Yeah.
And that was a trigger from my childhood.
Right.
So my feelings of rejection and the anger subsequently, I think that was my first bout of insomnia. And I had insomnia on and off, and it got worse over the course of my life. But it probably started around 19 and then just ended a few years ago. And it got worse. When I got depressed, it was much worse. And I absolutely believe all of it was suppressed anger. A lot of it was suppressed anger at my father.
Wow. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And now it's gone. I have zero suppressed anger. And I'm sleeping better than I ever have in my life.
That's fantastic.
So I wanted to share that to encourage everyone who's listening. Some people, I think their suppressed anger haunts them like it did me with insomnia or difficulty sleeping. But some people have headaches and migraines and digestive issues. And I wanted to also add that because I see that a lot.
Right.
And my daughter, you know, I betrayed her when she was 5. And we talked about that because I emotionally abandoned her when I got depressed. We talked about that in the last episode. She started having almost daily headaches and stomach aches around that time.
Right. I remember.
And just having anxiety. And I had no idea why. She had no idea why. She was, you know, about 6. And she just had them until very recently, as in like a month and a half ago, throughout her life. And very high levels of anxiety as well.
Right.
And so when she was over here like a couple weeks ago, I was checking in with her. How's your anxiety? She goes, you know, I think I'm just really angry. And I said, yeah, I think your anger is at me. And she goes, yeah, it is. And I said, do you want to share more? And she goes, no. And I go, okay. And then she's like, wait, what? You're not going to like try to get me to talk about it? I go, no, I totally respect your boundary. If you don't want to talk about it and you say it's at me, I respect that and I believe it. And then she's like, oh my God, who are you? Because I'm not trying to make her talk. And then the last time she came over was just a few days ago. I think all the anger's gone. All her headaches are gone. All her stomach aches are gone. Her anxiety is very low for the first time in her life. And it's been about 14 years. It was all suppressed anger at me. I absolutely believe that.
Yeah.
And it took a lot of work on my end to recognize it, to apologize, and to earn back her trust. And I think we're at the juncture now where I've earned it back and her anger's gone and she is feeling back to how she did when she was 5 again.
That's awesome.
So I just want to put this out there because I want to encourage people, if you have headaches and have had them for a long time and have tried everything, please consider that it is suppressed anger. And suppressed anger of that level is only at someone who can betray you. And that's usually someone who is very important in your life, like a parent. Right. It could be a partner. It could be your own child or a sibling, but it's usually someone like a parent.
Yeah.
And know that there's hope. You can unsuppress it. So let's talk about unsuppressing it, because what I have found, so a lot of my clients have headaches or migraines or, you know, nausea or stomach aches or, you know, digestive issues and lots of anxiety, of course. And I believe it's all suppressed anger. I see it all the time. And a lot of them are really afraid to unsuppress it because, and you know, I get it. They think, oh my God, if I tap into this lifelong sequestered anger and rage, what's going to happen? It's going to erupt like a volcano and it's never going to stop and it's going to create chaos. And so I just want to just give words and language to that, because yes, that sounds like it is reasonable and it could happen, but I just want to encourage everyone. It's actually the opposite. It is absolutely the opposite. It is so counterintuitive that when our feelings are finally attuned to, when we finally have empathy for ourselves or find someone else who can empathize with us and name our feelings and validate them and know that they're important and they're meaningful and they're there for a good reason. When we finally arrive at that place, that's actually when our feelings are shared. And what's shareable is bearable. And that is when our feelings can finally be expressed and externalized out of our bodies and stop haunting us. And they dissipate. They really, really do. So we can do that through a good friend or a good therapist who validates and empathizes and hears us. And we can also do it for ourselves, for our inner child. And so, and ultimately we want to get good at doing it for ourselves, for our inner child. So that's important, because that's really the lifelong takeaway here. Because there's times, Katie, where I want you to be right here attuning to me, but I need to do it for myself.
Right.
And so I'm going to give an example of that. So this last week, I shared with Katie before we recorded this podcast that my dad has reached out to me in email and been very manipulative in trying to win me back without apologizing and without owning his behavior and without changing. And he's really trying to do that by like, oh, I need you in my life. But I'm like, great. That's great. You need me in your life. Where's that apology? Where I need to hear it. I need you to become a trustworthy person, become a safe person. And he's not willing to do that, right? So when he first emailed me this week and said, his email basically said, you know, are we ready to open the channel of communication? I need you in my life. So when I read that, little Bronwyn was like, oh, he needs me in his life. Oh, and like, I could feel the seed of hope wanting to sprout.
Yeah.
And what I had to do is attune to my inner child. I had to say, it's okay, little Bronwyn, you have hope. This is hopeful to read him say that, to read his email. It's okay. You have a little bit of hope, and I hear that hope and I see why you have it. But let's remember who this person is. Let's remember the whole of mm-hmm. who he is. Let's remember, you know, that he is 80% monster, and it's okay to have a seed of hope. But I'm here to remind you of the big picture, and we're going to keep that hope in check. We're going to manage our expectations, and I'm here, adult Bronwyn is here to help you see the big picture and all of it, and to just know you can have that seed of hope, but until the conditions of the soil conditions are met, we're not going to let it sprout yet. We're just going to have the seed.
Right.
And I really had to do that for myself this week.
I imagine. Yeah. That must have felt really good for a moment for him to express an interest in connecting with you.
It did feel really good.
Yeah.
Until it didn't.
Yeah.
Until I responded as an adult and said, yeah, that's great. But, you know, you can't circumvent what I'm asking you to do.
No.
And then he blew up.
Yeah.
Right. So that is self-attunement. That is learning to attune to our inner child. And that is what I, as a therapist, you know, what I help my clients to do is, and that is also integration. So we can integrate other people in our minds by seeing all of who they really are. But our goal is to also integrate ourselves. And that is our adult selves attuning to our child selves.
Right.
And our child selves, I have found, are very, very angry. They're angry at the people who have harmed us, but they're also very angry at us, the adult self who has betrayed them.
By not listening.
And abandoned them.
Right.
Yes. But because we tend to parent our inner child the way our parents parented us as children.
Oh.
So we do abandon our inner children because we dismiss their feelings. We go, Bronwyn, you're fine. You're good. Everything's good.
Right. Shrug it off.
Don't be angry. Move on.
Let it go.
That's what we do to our inner children. And so for us to integrate means, you know what? I'm sorry, little Bronwyn, that I have dismissed your feelings and minimized them and overridden you. Over and over and over. I am sorry I told you it's not okay to be angry. Guess what? From here on out, I am committed to earning back your trust and I am going to attune to you. And you get to be as angry as you want. And I will not abandon you. I will not shame you. I will simply listen and validate your feelings because right. they matter to me. And you're a priority to me. You are important to me. And therefore, your feelings are important to me. Your needs are important to me. Your limitations are important to me. And I will prioritize all of those things. And I will advocate for you with anyone else who wants to disregard and doesn't want to respect those things. I will be your advocate. I will protect you from here on out from those unsafe people.
Right. How would you suggest someone get in touch with their, not to sound too hokey, but like for someone who's never even like considered that they have an inner child
yeah.
and even really like looked at that.
Yeah.
Like how would you suggest someone approach that?
Yeah, that's an easy one for me these days. What your body is speaking, because I absolutely see that our bodies are speaking to us. So that's why I brought up the headaches, the migraines,
right.
the digestive issues, the insomnia, the sleeping issues. It could be also autoimmune. I don't believe all autoimmune, or actually I should say, I don't believe all these things are always simply mental suppressed anger, but I do think most are. So autoimmune issues, I think, can be suppressed anger as well. So our bodies are speaking to us. And so what I ask my clients is, you know, I say, what, can you close your eyes and just tell me what you feel in your body right now when you say that or when I say this?
Mm-hmm.
And our bodies are really good at always communicating if we're willing to listen. And I believe our bodies are our inner children speaking to us. And so we can start there. Like, so when you felt uncomfortable at the salon,
right.
you probably felt it in your body and you honored it. You did not betray it. You said, I'm feeling uncomfortable. Maybe you felt it in your chest.
Yeah.
Maybe you felt it in your stomach. Maybe you felt it in your head, your temples, in your shoulders. And you just pay attention and go, okay, this is important.
Yeah.
My body's trying to say something to me right now and I'm going to honor that. I'm not going to dismiss it anymore. I'm not going to ignore it. I'm going to attuned to it.
Right. Mm-hmm. Okay. That makes sense.
Does anything come up for you when I say that?
In that moment, I'm trying to think about how I felt. And I think I felt almost a feeling of like needing to flee, like a, just a physical feeling of yeah. like, I need to get up and get out.
My gosh. Like,
yeah. Right. As opposed to yeah. like a stomach ache yeah. or like tension in the head yeah. or something, you know, it was just like, get out.
And you did.
And I did. Yeah.
So Katie, you are earning back little Katie's trust.
Right.
You are. And so, and I do want to say this, when we start to do that, our inner children will start to talk to us more. And so what I find is when clients start to trust themselves like this, that's when they're like, I'm getting more headaches. And I'm like, you know what? It gets worse before it gets better. Like that means little Katie is trying to communicate to you more because she's more hopeful now. So please don't shush her.
Yeah.
Please, next time you get a headache, do not medicate her away. Please say, okay, little Katie, it sounds like you're angry. Can you tell me more? Help me understand what you're angry at. Oh, you're angry at that man who cut you off? Yes, me too.
Yeah.
You are absolutely entitled to be angry at that.
Right.
So do more. Go there more. Right?
Mm-hmm. Like acknowledging reality more, right? Yeah, like more. Being in touch with
yeah.
reality instead of like hiding from it or trying to
yes.
pretend it's not there.
Yes. And when you do that, your inner child will start to talk to you more and more. It might be through dreams. It might be through your body. It might be through both or memories.
Mm.
Oh yeah. Memories.
Yeah. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And, but like, remember the goal is integration. Your inner child wants to integrate with you. So those memories aren't to shame you or hurt you. And she's only going to give them to you when you're ready and when she's ready. And the goal is to integrate for you to say, you know what? I've blocked out those memories, but now I'm realizing that I have not been true to you.
Right.
And that you need to communicate those with me. And together, we can process them. We're safe together because you're not going to be alone in your anger anymore.
Right.
No more. You will never be alone in your anger again. We're ready to get rid of it out of our bodies into the ether now.
Yeah.
So the goal isn't to become an angry, quote, angry person.
Right.
The goal is to connect with our anger, to channel it in a healthy way so it can alleviate our stress. It can leave our body and stop haunting us.
Yeah.
And that's for real. Like I am living proof. At age 52, I have never felt better, more energetic, more alive in my entire life.
Yeah, I can attest it. I can see it in you. Yeah. I hear it in your voice.
Yeah.
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 Like I didn't even know about your insomnia had resolved until recently. You told me that. That's amazing.
It's amazing. And as you know, I have so many dreams now. And it was funny. I was talking to my husband, Steve, and he was saying, you know, sometimes I'll have a dream, but it like it's only there the minute I wake up and then it leaves. And I'm like, I used to have that.
Yeah.
But it's like now everything's clearer. Like my brain's clearer. And I wake up in the morning. And I'm like, oh, and then the dream, it just is there. And I'm able to like spend time and think through it and process it and see what the meaning is and what my brain is trying to tell me. Like everything's clear. I think my brain always wanted to do that in the past, but my brain wasn't clear enough to do that. And now I'm finally able to do that.
What a great resource for you, right? You've been able to like connect so many pieces of the puzzle.
I think if I were to sum how I feel right now, I feel more alive than I've ever felt. And when I say alive, I think of so many people who are like the opposite. They're like physically alive, but they're kind of like walking dead people. Do you know what I'm saying?
I do know what you're saying.
And I've been one of those people.
Yeah.
But I think there are a lot of people who are not alive. And it is Halloween almost. So let's talk about The Walking Dead. I do think there are living dead people. My mom was one of those people.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I've said this before. I don't miss her. She died just, 5 months ago. I don't miss her. There's nothing to miss. She was not an alive person to begin with. So
right.
I'm not saying this out of malice. I'm just being very honest. Like, what would I miss?
There wasn't any substance there.
There was no substance. Yeah. And I know those people exist because most of my clients have people like that in their lives.
Right.
And guys, let's be alive while we're alive. Like, let's not give up hope and not look to medicine to save
them. If people like that, is it because they've been so out of touch and so untrue to themselves for so long?
Yeah.
Right? That they lose their substance.
Yeah.
Yeah.
There are a lot of people with no substance. And we call them narcissists. But they have no substance.
Yeah.
There's nothing there.
Yeah.
Behind their eyes.
You can't really miss something that wasn't there.
Cannot miss something that wasn't there. And so the cool thing is, as you grow to become more and more alive, it's easier and easier to walk away from the living dead.
Right.
It's not hard to leave those people when you're becoming more alive and you're like, well, now I feel what it's like to feel alive. And I don't want to actually have zombies in my life anymore. I don't need the zombies. I don't need the warm bodies. I don't need the people who just make me feel cold. I want the people who make me feel warm and who aren't manipulative with their warmth. And that would be like my dad, who can be warm, but it's a manipulative warmth.
Right. It's used for something. It's not like.
Yes. And there's plenty of those people too.
It's not freely given.
But the more alive you become, the more objectivity you have and the more you see that. And you're like, his warmth feels good, but it never lasts.
No, I don't have time for that.
I don't have time for that. I'm just too happy feeling alive right now. Like, I don't need that.
Yeah.
So it's almost like being alive begets more life.
Yeah.
You know?
I think you're right.
Any thoughts you have?
I don't think so.
Okay.
I think that kind of says it all.
It kind of does. I feel like this has been a pretty intense episode. Let me just look through my notes, see if there's anything more. Yeah. So attuning to our inner child, this is real. This is so, so, so real. Oh, I did have one more thing I wanted to talk about. So I'm going to call her Jenny. So Jenny, I had a dream about her last night. I think I'm supposed to talk about her on this podcast episode. Okay. I'm going to call her Jenny. That is not her real name. And, so she was someone I became friends with when I first moved to Oakland. When I was first depressed, I was desperate for a friend. We had a lot in common in some respects. She was the sweetest person, honestly. I think anyone who's met her would describe her as like the sweetest person. Mm-hmm. Total pleaser. And she disclosed to me at one point. So she had 4 children. She was a stay-at-home mom who was trying her best to homeschool and even unschool. And she didn't have any backbone of anger in her life, mm-hmm. right? But she disclosed to me that she endured sexual abuse from a stepfather as a child and a lot of verbal abuse as well. And she also disclosed that after her kids were asleep and her husband was asleep, she would sneak downstairs and get blackout drunk on a regular basis. And she didn't have any recollection of that often, but sometimes she would find the next day that she had like torn out the pages of her Bible into shreds while she was blacked out, and she was scared. And she also had some cirrhosis of the liver going on.
Wow.
She was very afraid, and she was young. I mean, she was in her 30s. So she had shared those things with me, and I had a dream about her last night. And so I really want to use her as an example of her inner child was so full of rage and betrayal feelings. And her inner child, little Jenny, could only speak to her when she was drunk, right? That's the only time little Jenny was able to speak, when she was in an altered state of consciousness. And there was so much rage and betrayal. Yes, it was at her stepfather, but I would say the majority was at her mother, who allowed this to all happen to her.
Right.
And didn't leave the stepfather until the mother had issues with him.
Hmm.
And I also witnessed her interactions with her mother, because when we would hang out, her mother would call her like every day and be like, "Hey, Jenny, I'm really struggling. Can you listen?" You know, she would play therapist to her mother. She would be her mother's confidant and just listen to her and attune to her.
Mm-hmm.
And it was so messed up and it was so backwards. And so this mother was still not getting a clue. And so I could see that she, little Jenny, could only express her rage and feelings of betrayal when drunk at night. And her, and those, the rage and betrayal little Jenny was expressing was at her stepmother, at her mother, and it was also at her. It was at adult Jenny.
Yeah.
Who was betraying her and dismissing her and not paying attention to her and staying very disintegrated from her.
I mean, that's like the ultimate disintegration, right? To sit in the closet and get blackout drunk.
But it's so common.
It's awful.
It's so common.
Yeah.
So I just, this, you know, my heart goes out to her to this day. I'm not sure that she's ever worked through her issues. She was looking into going to like, not a 12-step program, but some kind of like recovery program. But you know, guys, you can go through recovery. It's not going to work if you're still suppressing your anger. You're just going to shift addictions. What they call that, addiction transfer. Addiction transfer. It's what you hear when people go and have like their stomach stapled or whatever.
Right.
It's addiction transfer. They always end up becoming alcoholics or something else. Addiction transfer. If you just go through the motions of trying to stop the obsessive eating, obsessive drinking, the drug using, the pot using, the acting out sexually, if you just manage symptoms, it's not going to go away. You need to integrate. You need to connect and attune to your inner child and allow for that anger. It will not become chaotic. It will be the opposite. It is counterintuitive. That anger will finally be externalized and expressed when you allow for it to be attuned to and validated. It's there for a very good reason.
Right.
So I'm dedicating this episode to Jenny, which is not her real name.
Right.
I don't know if she listens. I wish she did.
Yeah.
Okay.
Okay.
So we'll wrap it up.
All right.
All right.